listening to the home of cool, irreverent, and entertaining talk right here on LA Talk Radio. You're listening to Answers for the Family with Alan Cardoza. Only on LA Talk Radio.
Hello, this is Alan Cardoza doing an incredible impression. I've decided to move on. This is Answers for the Family. And for this very special Christmas show, I've decided to do a show of impressions. And I've been working on this impression of T.J. McCormick for quite a while, and I think I've got it down. Hi, this is T.J. McCormick, and I am filling in very, very happily so for Alan Cardoza. You are, in fact, listening to Answers for the Family, maybe we'll make it a holiday edition. It's a holiday edition by virtue of it's December 22nd. Rob Spencer is with me. Good morning, Rob.
Good morning. Good morning.
And it's nice to have you around. We should have a pretty good show today, God willing.
Yep.
Alan is. Wow, this is funny. I just noticed that I didn't have my collar buttoned down.
And I'm okay. That's fine.
I don't. No. This is awful. That's so tacky to not have my. Oh, okay, much better. Anyway, so Alan has been under the weather and has also been traveling a bit, so he's just totally unavailable for the show today. But that's all right because we're gonna do a hell of a show. Rob, tell us about your role, what it is you do with Alan, and what your connection is to the show.
Okay, so basically, I kind of run the field team for Alan at West Shield, and we handle like runaways and right. Locates.
West Shield is Alan's investigation firm?
Yeah, it's actually called West Shield Adolescent Services. Primarily, okay. It's transports, juvenile transports. Mm-hmm. Then we also do some locates and some.
Okay, and now a lot of that lingo is kind of self-explanatory, but it is lingo nonetheless. So, for benefit of the audience, what is, even though it's kind of pretty obvious anyway, but when you say a transport, obviously you're moving a child from one place to another.
Yep.
What would the scenario be that they would need West Shield to come and do a transport?
Okay, so
first, I'm a good interviewer, by the way. Look
first,
at that.
Look, you got your feet up now?
Oh, yeah. I'm chilling. Pretend it's a fireplace crackling and we're just talking.
There you go. So anyway, so we go into a house.
Yeah.
Usually it's 2, 3 in the morning.
Uh-huh.
We wake up your son or daughter, and you may or may not introduce us, depending on what the parent would be comfortable with.
Mm-hmm.
From there, we'll wake them up. We'll tell them kind of what's going on, mm-hmm. and this is usually the first they've heard of it.
Wow!
And then we'll give them a chance to kind of wrap their heads around it. We'll try to talk them through it, and then basically get ready and head out to wherever program or treatment that they're going to.
So this is after other efforts have failed. Usually.
Sometimes yes, sometimes no. You know, it depends
on
the parent
kid.
At that point.
Right? Yeah. The parent, the kid, a lot of factors. In other words, you know, I'm sure there are professionals that there are situations where a traditional intervention just simply isn't going to work.
You know, what usually the people that we deal with don't even go through the intervention stuff.
Right.
You know, I think a lot of sense the intervention kind of world is based around drug abuse or alcoholism or
so what are some of the scenarios?
We do a lot of behavioral modification stuff.
Bad kids.
Yeah.
Kids behaving badly.
There you go.
Shouldn't say bad kids.
There you go. A lot of it is whether they just don't go to school or they're involved in gangs or they're in.
Right.
You know, usually all of it comes hand in hand. You know, if your kid is messing up at home. And they're not doing what they're supposed to. They're disrespectful.
Right.
Even get violent with the parents or siblings. Or they ditch school a lot. Or they're getting horrible grades.
Mm-hmm.
Or usually that kind of goes hand in hand with some of the drug usage and hanging out with the wrong crowd type of a thing. So
right. You know, there's a lot of people. You hear cliches, man. When you get old enough. You know, I just turned 40. You and I are probably in the same ballpark age-wise.
Yeah, 38.
Okay, there you go. When you're alive long enough, there will just inherently there will be my day, you know, back in my day, back in the day.
Yep.
Now, listen, there's been juvie. I mean, there's been, you've heard, you hear stories from our grandfathers about juvie hall. You know, there's different, I mean, you know, or friends of, you know, we know that there's been those juvenile halls all through. There's always been kids, bad kids, who maybe turn into recidivist criminals as adults. But it just seems like there's a whole different kind of bad behavior today.
It's way different.
It's way different, man. I mean, one thing was hooky. One thing, put it this way. Graffiti back in the day, now it's attached. It's the tip of a whole different iceberg
yeah,
now.
Yeah, absolutely.
You see a kid. Now, I don't even like to use the word tagging because that's their word. I hate to give them the respect of calling it tag. But you see a kid out there tagging. He's not just saying, "I'm Larry," you know.
Yeah, exactly.
It's like, this is the territory. If you step right.
Yep. You hear all the time on the news about people walking up trying to stop kids from tagging, and they get shot. They
just happened this weekend.
Oh, there you go.
Just happened this weekend in Hollywood.
Yep.
30-something-year-old guy and a friend of his were driving home, and he yelled at this kid, and they pumped this guy. They pumped him full of friggin' lead.
Yep. There you go.
So the behavior is morphed into, like, again, you got the bad behavior, but, you know, and the kids in the, you know, a gang used to mean the T-Birds, you know, and Danny Zuko, you know, and they would break out into song. Those gangs, you know, between them and the Sharks and the Jets, they used to sing and dance.
There you go.
Now, it's, you know, so basically the thing is that I don't even know where to begin with some of this stuff. First of all, how much of this, when you show up and you enter someone's home, at the behest of these parents, how often do you think that the kid you're going to pick up is messed up because of those people who called you? In other words, the activity or lack thereof of the parents who are actually calling you to help the frig out.
You know, I personally want to be brutally honest with you right now.
Right.
I kind of got to stay in the area of a little correctness for Alan. For Alan
Cool. I got you.
I'll say a lot.
Okay, cool. That's fine. And by the way, if anybody has any questions at all, the number here is 323-203-0815. 323-203-0815. And West Shield, how can people reach West Shield if they need your services?
You can call the 800 number. It's 800-899-8585.
800-899-8585. Okay, cool. So there you go. So if you need anything anything at all from West Shield, their services. And if you have any questions, any comments or anything like that, whatever Rob can comment on or opine about, then he will. We were going to have a guest in here.
Yep.
A reformed gang member does not necessarily mean a punctual or reliable gang member, just like, you know, anybody else in this town. What was this guy's story, generally speaking, and maybe we'll just talk about guys like him.
You know, basically, he's the average guy that. Well, you know what? Actually, this guy does have a very interesting story. Mm-hmm. Since I'm not going to use his name or anything, I'm going to be able to tell you about it. But, you know, when he was very young, I think he was 9,
mm-hmm.
he was enrolled in college. Mm-hmm. He was a mathematical genius.
Really?
Yeah, yeah. And his dad got this terminal illness and passed away.
Mm.
And in the hospital, on his deathbed, he just asked his kid...
Mm-hmm.
To continue his education, to continue the path that he's on educationally through college and that kind of thing, because he could do great things. Shortly after that, his mom thought that socially and through his development that way, it'd be much better to pull him out of college, put him into regular school, that kind of stuff. And it just created a huge wedge between his mom.
And how old was he?
He was like, probably around this time, he was 10 or 11.
And he was in college.
He was taking college courses for mathematics.
Okay, you know, So mom,
I mean, on one hand, I understand that if your kid is involved in something, he needs to kind of have that platform to excel. On the other hand, I can totally understand how, you know, the reality of it is this. I know that I send my kid to school, and I send him there for almost social development more than I do academic development.
Okay.
We got that covered.
Right.
He's in fifth grade.
Right.
So I kind of understand where she's coming from, and I don't even necessarily think she was wrong in doing what she did.
Okay.
At least for the sake of him.
Right.
You know, and his development through his adolescence and life and that kind of thing.
Sure.
Can you imagine when he hits 15 and he has no dad and he's only isolated to this super academic-driven world? I mean, he's just going to be a mess.
Yeah.
So anyways, from there, create a huge wedge between between him and his mom because, you know, when your dad tells you on his deathbed, the one last thing he wants you to do is
That's a burden.
Huge, heavy on him. So he separated, like just kind of went down.
Detached
everything. Stopped doing everything that he was doing before academically and everything else and just kind of plugged into the streets. And
what region, what area of Los Angeles?
Actually down more towards the Santa Ana, some of the nastier
Chino,
parts of... more like some of the nastier parts of Orange County. Santa Ana. And Costa Mesa, places like that.
Yeah, all right.
Anyway, so... So from there, he just got really involved in the gang life and that kind of
thing. Was this kid Latino?
No, he's actually,
Whatever. Okay, yeah, but he's not Latino. Because I was right. I'm just looking for a cultural connection. That's all. Yeah. That's all I was wondering about. That's all. I was just wondering if it was a cultural connection. That's all.
Right. He's culturally connected to gang life, yes.
Okay, different. We'll leave it at that. Gotcha, cool.
So anyway, so he just got real involved and plugged in and ran wild in that lifestyle all the way up until I met him.
Right.
And then when I met him, we kind of built this little relationship and rapport.
Mm-hmm.
And just through the course of that relationship, he went back to his mom and kind of bridged that relationship back together and kind of got out of the gang stuff.
And
he's like a semester away from graduating college, and he's going to be a math
and he's gonna
teacher
be fine.
In high school.
He's going to be fine.
He's going to be fine now.
He's going to be fine.
He's been through a share of police and drugs and shootings and stabbings and fights and all that nonsense as well.
Now, I hope I didn't sound either ignorant or biased or in any way when I asked if he was Latino.
No, Santa Ana.
Because then
a heavy population of Latinos.
Yeah, because I was, and also you just associate, you know, but then again, there's other ethnic groups that are manifesting themselves in different gangs and here in Los Angeles in the Los Angeles Basin, you know. It's a real melting pot.
Los Angeles Basin has every group of people in the world.
Yeah, and they all seem to, and every group of people, every nationality has its, and listen, there's Irish gangs for crying out loud. You know, there's a bunch of redheaded mics running around with guns. You know, it is what it is. So, but anyway, what I'm wondering though is with the proliferation of all this melting pot aspect, does that tend to breed? Put it this way, you only got so much territory, and you got XYZ gang over here, and XYZ gang over here, and PDQ gang over here. It seems like there's only so much turf. In other words, I guess my question is it with all of these crisscrossing, intersecting gangs and territory and nationalities, is the potential for a kid to get mixed up in it greater, A, and B, is the
Absolutely.
Potential for violence even that much worse?
First off,
I'm a great
gangs
interviewer.
Are all over right. every right. community. I don't care if you sit in a $10 million home and your kid goes to a very elite school or you live in the ghetto somewhere and your kid is caught in a lovely LA school district, right? So whatever demographic you're in, your kid definitely has exposure to gang life.
Mm-hmm.
Definitely. Mm-hmm. Now, along with that, though, the thing about gangs and stuff like that is, on a street level, they are they're very ethnic orientated.
Okay.
You know, there were a couple biker gangs that came up and they kind of just said, we'll take anybody. And really, they wanted to match up against the big guy, you know, the Hells Angels. We'll take anybody. And they recruited that way and that kind of thing. But for the most part, gangs are ethnically specific.
Right.
And really, when it gets down to a few different layers, there's really a couple gangs. a few gangs in the country that are running everything.
And then it's just a bunch of subsects.
Absolutely.
Kind of like the five families in the mafia.
Yeah,
the
probably got, very similar.
You got your
to
Columbo,
that.
You got your yeah, right.
Right. So that's kind of where it goes, you know. Unfortunately,
who are those gangs?
So far, you know, the names of them, that kind of thing. They all have their ties, and, and you kind of leave that alone.
Okay.
On a street level type thing, what happens is these gangs kind of, I want to say, victimize the kids that are lacking something, and they're looking.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they're victimizing the kids that are missing that father figure or that
kind of like that, the old stories of the and I'm not gonna get funky on you, but but you know, the people talk about how the devil operates.
Right.
People talk about how Satan will come in and, you know,
just capitalize on wherever your hardship is,
on that weakness.
Yep, exactly.
You know what I mean? It's a sign on the dotted line. I got you.
The guys that are up there, they are very good at what they do, and they are just as skilled and qualified, and from the looks of our economy, maybe even more skilled and qualified than a lot of these Fortune 500 corporation CEOs.
Yeah. Right.
It's amazing. It's amazing the level of organization and detail and the amount of money they make and the way they go about doing it. I mean,
now the way that we see the old Godfather, you know, the Godfather movies, the mafia movies, you see how these guys graduate from being a button man, being a foot soldier, and they eventually, you know, move on and upwards socially and otherwise, and to the point where they're sitting, you know, they're actually participating, and it's true life. They participate in charitable organizations, and they are like captains of industry. We never associate gang members with this kind of thing. You know, you have the people that make the news every now and then, that Tootie whatever guy who eventually was put to death upstate or whatever, or Tookie Williams or whatever. Does that same progression exist within the gang culture? Do these guys become suburbanites? Do they eventually move to the suburbs and kind of basically, you know, really separate them? Is that same system of buffers in place so that they don't end up going up the river for other people?
Well, the reality of it is this. Most gang members are dead or incarcerated by the age of 25.
Gotcha.
Like 90-some percent.
Gotcha.
All right. So with that in mind, there are families. When I say families, I don't necessarily mean blood, but they're families that are kind of tight, and those families kind of keep reign and keep charge.
Right.
On the street level, it gets down to, you know what, the reality of it is there's you're going to be dead or incarcerated by the age of 25. That's the reality.
Right, right. The numbers don't lie.
Yeah. Right, exactly. I will say this, though. My oldest brother used to be a really big drug dealer.
Okay.
And he had a partner. And one time his partner, I actually just came across him one time in the city of Norwalk, where I kind of came from and stuff. Mm-hmm. And I came across him. He said, you know, he's talking, hey, how you doing? And these guys they're not all just hardcore, ridiculous, bad people all the time. You know, they do bad things for business.
Right.
Money breeds greed, and greedy people do crazy, ridiculous stuff.
Right.
Anyways, so he came up and we were having this little conversation. He's asking me, you know, how my family is, how my older brother's doing, and, you know, I kind of where he's at and stuff. Obviously, I leave all that stuff out. And but one thing he did do is he said, you know what, I'm getting out. This is it. You know, so he goes to take me to the trunk of his car, and pops the trunk and shows me just a lot of weed in his car, and he tells me it's like four to I can't remember exactly. I think it's $4 or $7 million worth of weed right there. But what he was doing is he was making this deal.
This is it.
He's taking three. He's taking 3 mil for himself and bolting down out of the country, and he's taking 4 mil and he's donating it to this rec center, this in Norwalk, basically. I don't know if that ever came about or if it ever happened or didn't happen, but. In his heart and in his intention, you know, that's what he was doing. So to go along the lines of what you're saying, you see these guys come plugged in and they become involved in charities and different things like that.
Happens
happens a lot, you know.
And now, do these guys now? So I guess another question would be: do they are a lot of these gangs, because of those numbers, are they ruled on a regular basis from within the prison? Is the prison system?
Absolutely.
Actually, let me ask you this before I get into that: is there, again, just using what your our listeners, the pedestrian people are used to, we'll stick with that Godfather reference or the real Gambino crime. If you were, if a crime busting team from the LAPD, or let's say federal, looking like nationwide, because like you said, mm-hmm. it's fascinating to know that there's like just a couple really that is there ultimately one picture. And of course, I'm not asking you who it is, but is there like a picture of one guy who sits at the top of any one of these syndicates, and then it trickles down, or is it because of prison and death and this and the simple geography of it? Is it more of a handful of guys who run, or is there an ultimate grand poobah?
Different ethnicities have different ways of doing it.
Gotcha. You know,
for the most part, cool. Right. There's a few people up top.
Okay.
You know, there's. Some cases there's one guy that's mm-hmm. That's kind of calling shots and that mm-hmm. kind of thing. But for the most part, it's all governed or ruled by a bunch of the OG guys, which are the old schoolers that are mm-hmm. a lot of them are in prison now, right. And they're running the streets even right. from their cell.
Right.
You know, when it comes to just one individual guy at top or something mm-hmm. like that, once this gang is recognized, mm-hmm. there's different people doing different things, and so far as that kind of gathered up as intel and used mm-hmm. For any type of law enforcement or something like that, mm-hmm. they don't necessarily look at one guy as like, hey, this guy, we got to get this guy,
right?
You know, they kind of look at, okay, this guy, we got to get this guy and mm-hmm. all his people, and then we right. got to get this group of people, and then this guy over here is doing this and that kind mm-hmm. of stuff. So, you know, it's very it's so big,
yeah. Just the geography of it, when I just think about the fact that it's like, you know, from coast to coast, that they're exactly. all intertwined. I mean, even these mafia families and other gangs.
Down out of the country as well.
Right. Wow. Because that's where they got to go to.
Yeah,
and that's,
exactly.
And now, so another question I have is, will some of these guys, let's say the ones who are on the outside, mm-hmm. Will they... Like I was wondering, will they go suburban? Will they, or if they don't go suburban literally, will they, you know, remove themselves from the actual criminal activity, therefore provide that, you know, that moat, so
absolutely.
To speak, of safety,
absolutely.
Where, like, they're not going to go down. They got their soldiers, and it's a series of phone calls, but so that they cannot be connected, and therefore they're going to stay out of prison.
There's always a way mm-hmm. to connect you.
Right.
It might be deep.
But to prove it, in other words, this is how they...
It's
going
to be deep and long to right. make that proof. Right. But, you know, that's what the street guys are for. They're right. to get incarcerated.
Right.
They're to, you know, 14-year-old kid, what's he going to do?
Yeah.
Go spend 6 months in right. some juvenile hall where he's right. going to eat candy out of vending machines right. and watch movies twice a week?
I mean, right.
what kind of deterrent is that
right.
exactly?
Right.
So that's the people... Unfortunately... Those mm-hmm. are the kids that take the fall. If the parents that are listening that think, mm-hmm. okay, I got kids that might be... Your kids are the ones that are going to take the fall.
And there's also the ultimate fall. And I recently was watching... I'm not asking you in the same respect that I asked a few minutes ago. So I'm not barking up the same tree when I get to the question, and you'll see where I'm going.
Yeah.
But the ultimate fall, obviously, is when – and parents who are listening who think they have an at-risk child, I guess that would be a term yep. to use. You have to look really seriously at the potential there. You know, that news story about the kid in the street and, you know, and or in the prison or in the psych ward or in the hospital is – That could potentially be your kid, and that's not a scare tactic to say that to a parent.
Right.
That is legitimately, and I believe, and I'll say this. I'll take this off of you and Alan. I think it's incumbent upon a parent to do their due diligence and look at all possible things. And you're not being crazy, and you're not being dramatic when you connect some dots ahead of time and say,
absolutely
my kid
not.
Could end up, etc. So I'm watching this thing on National Geographic. Very heavy expose on gangs. I think they call it Gangland. I think it's the name of the show.
Great show.
Amazing show. And disturbing as hell. Even when I am plugged in, I'm pretty much aware of just about a lot of things going on in the world. not in depth, but enough to ask a guy like you questions. Right. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. I'm aware of things. And it is shocking to see the blatant disregard, forget for human life. I mean, for their own lives, for the law, a disregard of everything. And here's something that just struck me. And this one particular one, they were covering the recent, it was like an, I guess it was over the last 2 years, they shot this documentary. But at the time of the of this documentary, they were there was a bit of an a bit of a gang war going on. And there was a slew of these kids, these funerals. And here was this African-American gang that it was down in, I think it was very cliche. It was in Compton or whatever, Inglewood, I don't know. And there was the big funeral in the big Baptist church. And there was all the people wearing white. And there was the kid laying in the casket wearing white. And they eventually interview the mom. And she's talking gang lingo. She's talking about how, you know, using terms like, you know, it's a shame. And talk. It. What I'm wondering is how. Again, I don't. I do want to ask you the same kind of question. Basically, when
ask away.
Well, you know, it's like I want to ask you again about the parents and their part, but I know I can't. Well, I don't
let
wanna,
me tell you this. This will actually answer your question.
Okay, go ahead.
We are so many layers into this type of way of life.
Yeah.
That. For every parent, mm-hmm. it will take generations and generations and generations to breed this out of our society.
Wow, that's a fascinating statement. Say that again. It'll take generations.
It will take generations and generations of generations to kind of breed this it. Out
that's
of our society.
That's a fascinating statement.
You know, when you – and I almost can understand to an extent. When you live a lifestyle of nothing, when day to day you wake up, you go to work at some job that is paying you just enough not to quit, and you're giving them just enough not to get fired.
Right.
It breeds a mentality of complacency.
Okay.
It also breeds a mentality of desperation when it comes to outside of that environment. When you're working today to live today, who cares about tomorrow?
And when that obvious to go the real typical route here and to say a real cliche, when the idea is to go and flip burgers for $6.25 an hour, or you can go and you can spend an hour on the street corner and make, you know, and make
a
few hundred bucks over the course of a week, a few grand.
And you're 15.
And you're
15. You're 12.
Right. You do on a practical level.
And you sit there and you watch your parents grind their fingers to the bone, making $8 an hour, $9 an hour, $10 an hour.
Let me ask you a political question. Yeah. And I'm not asking for your political beliefs, but I'm just wondering, I'd say people could say it as a political question, but how much of your job, how much of the job of parents, how much of the job of law enforcement do you think, based on your street level knowledge, how much of it would be easier if a bit more of a curb or a bit more of a clamping down on illegal immigration would help? How much of that would maybe?
Okay. Actually, to be quite honest, a ton in our local community.
Right.
In Southern California, if we could legally get that under control, it would free up a lot of opportunity. Right now, greed makes people do ugly things. Whether you're a white collar guy that sits back and you're
like that guy in New York last week, $50 billion, just as much a criminal as any.
Absolutely, yep. Absolutely. So you take that mentality, and you know what? A guy, just because a guy has $50 million in the bank, or $10 million, or $500,000 a year, doesn't mean in his head, I'm good. That's enough. Let me give back.
Right.
It's amazing the type of mentality that will always capitalize. So that mentality right there, now you own a business.
Right.
And you're getting killed in taxes. And the opportunity comes up to hire a guy that's going to get the job done for a fraction of the money. And there's going to be no headaches. And there's going to be no lawsuits afterwards. And there's a – what are you going to do? So obviously what's right to do
– right.
isn't necessarily what happens.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, look around.
Yeah.
But even though the hardest things sometimes are the right things, people need to take a stand at some point.
Yeah.
You know, it's every layer.
Mm-hmm.
So if we could get legal immigration under control,
right.
We as a Southern California state,
sure.
You know, all of California, really, because it goes all the way
up north, in
the agriculture.
Sure.
Anyways, if we could get that under control,
right.
Our people would benefit a ton.
Yeah.
A ton.
Yeah.
But.
Just based on volume. Just based on numbers alone.
Just based on volume.
Just based on numbers alone.
Not just numbers alone. Based on social services alone.
Well, that's what I mean. I mean the number of people. Those numbers. That's what I mean. So, yeah. Social services is so overwhelmed. It's like, you know,
It's so easy to get.
Yeah. 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 And I've made... And when these people are benefit taking and by virtue of the fact that they're here legally and not paying taxes, they're not kicking back in. It's basically not a renewable resource here.
Exactly.
It's not, you know.
Exactly.
And the thing is that and I'm not looking at it from a perspective of really my views and goals about things like illegal immigration now really do hinge more on what you do for a living. I really do look at it from a social perspective, not a, oh, they're taking our jobs and look at all the Spanish right, on the buses. Right. No, right. I got past that a long time ago. Yeah. You know, I mean, it's a little frustrating sometimes, and a lot of times you don't feel like you're in America. It's kind of weird in that regard, but I'm past that. I'm not concerned. My concern is the kids and the families that are drowning, literally and figuratively drowning. And that's what I say when I say numbers, just sheer volume of people that are here. And the analogy I've made is that, you know, if you go after 3 years of living in a house and you say, I'm going to organize this garage. I'm going to go in there. Now, the very first thing you got to do is you got to take everything out of the garage and you got to throw stuff away. I go through this with my wife twice a year. Because she complains about how there's no room in her closet. And I say, you got shoes in there that you haven't worn in 9 years. You got to throw this shit away. Oh, sorry. I'm on Alan's show. You got to throw this stuff away. And by the way, you are listening to Answers for the Family. I am TJ McCormick filling in today for Alan Cardoza. And I am sitting here with Rob Spencer, who is Alan's right-hand man and the head of your – what is it? You run his –
basically the field.
You run his field unit, the field team. And Rob is a man of much knowledge. They deal with at-risk teens, and they basically do provide answers for families that have children, teens, who are at risk or have gone beyond at risk or are into it up to their eyeballs and are actually actively doing any one of a number of things that is for – for lack of a better term and for really just putting it lightly, that are not really that conducive to a healthy, happy life. Everything from truancy to actually committing crimes and battered parents. I'm sure there's a lot of battered
tons,
parents.
Tons.
Yeah, and parents basically, they'll come to you guys and they'll be like,
there are parents that are so afraid of their kids.
Mm.
You know, it's actually sad is what it is. When you walk into a house and the wheelchaired grandmother has been beaten up by the 15-year-old son who beat her up because she wouldn't give him some money or she wouldn't, you know, that's ridiculous.
Do you have to get a – now, is it all – by the time you show up, by the time Rob shows up and West Shield is called in, because I know you're like, you can't – law enforcement has to be. Does law enforcement have something? You have to get the okay, don't you? I mean,
no. Here's the way it works.
Okay, this is
different,
fascinating.
Different avenues give us the okay. Okay, let's say the kid's now involved in the legal system.
Okay.
Well, that court might order us to go in and pull him out of there.
Okay.
And let's say he's a menace on the community.
Right.
A lot of times, law enforcement will be like, oh, you know,
please.
Good.
Yeah, it's all yours.
Let's say it's. Parents still have control.
So under 18,
custody or control. A lot of times it doesn't even matter if the parents aren't cutting it. The court will step in.
Right.
Period.
Right.
Which is a bad place to be.
Mm-hmm.
But parents will give us authority, basically custody, and then we'll go in that way. So there's ways to stay under the radar and not get caught up in the bureaucracy.
Right.
If it gets to the point of legality, I want to say, I hope you're going to give me a job after this because Alan's going to fire me. And this liberal,
I'm with you.
And this liberal system.
Oh,
that we
you
have,
are, you are. Yes, go ahead. Yes.
And this liberal system, it is so difficult.
Yeah.
To just do
right
the most simplest thing
right
that will make the biggest difference.
Right.
So
I got you.
Just in and out of juvies and courts and schools, and it's ridiculous.
Yeah.
You know what the sad part is? It all boils down to which group of people that supposedly, this is the part where I get fired, that's supposedly there for our kids.
Right.
Is either only looking out for their budget.
Right.
On how much is going out, or only looking out for their budget on how much is coming in.
Right.
You know, and I'm not saying the programs and that kind of thing where they go to. I'm saying the public. Well, look at our state right now.
Right.
You know, when we have millions and millions and millions of more dollars going out than we do coming in.
Right.
We got a problem.
Yeah. And again, you know, so often I do look at it. I do look at it through the lenses of the illegal immigration. Again,
absolutely.
That's when I use, again, that term, the numbers. Just this state is it's funny. There's a commercial on. Let me see. Oh, wait, let's see. I think this might be your former boss. hello, you're on Answers for the Family with Alan Cardoza, sounding like T.J. McCormick.
Actually, this is Alan Cardoza.
Oh, wow. No, this is T.J. McCormick doing a great Alan Cardoza. Wouldn't that be fascinating?
That's right. Well, you know, you had such a great impersonation, I was afraid to call in.
Alan Cardoza, who is unavailable today for the show. And Alan, what's going on? How you doing there, buddy?
I'm doing great. I feel good now. I'm calling in from New York, and I actually thought about calling in as your mystery gang member, but I didn't think I could pull that one
off.
Yeah,
the accent doesn't.
Yeah, the accent wouldn't have worked. So, Alan, do you have any comments about have you been able to hear the show at all? Have you been able to listen?
I've only been able to hear a little bit.
Thank goodness.
For some reason, my iPhone is not picking it up real well, or at least not consistently.
Okay.
But from what I have heard, it sounds great. Like I said, I got the first part with your with the impersonation, and it was so good, I thought I was hearing me.
There you go. Wow. well, Rob and I were just talking about one of the things we were talking about is you know sometimes the you guys can bump into obstacles in terms of you know bureaucracies and stuff like that. It can kind of and we understand, everybody understands is there's I's that have to be dotted and T's that have to be crossed, and there's people, a lot of people, I think they call it CYA, people, you know, got to cover your ass every now and then. And so, but it can make your guys' job, and your job is about doing the right thing. And a lot of times,
exactly,
bureaucracy can get in the way of doing the right thing.
Exactly.
You're absolutely right. And for the most part, law enforcement and people that we work with are really good to work with. They understand what we're doing. In fact, most of them see us as a great asset, that we're doing something that they may not have time for. But unfortunately, there are times too that we run into people who either don't understand or think that they're the only ones that can do it, that sometimes slow the process down.
Right. And you know, I was just about to ask Rob about you know, he said it's one of the most heartbreaking things is to walk into a situation and the whole battered parent syndrome or the battered guardian, being, you know, whether it's grandma in a wheelchair. And I think I was about to ask Rob what it's like to actually be, you know, Rob is not an intimidating figure, but an imposing figure. I think it, as I did say, it's like he's the guy I'd like to grow up to be someday, physically, just literally for like a weekend, be as big as him. It really would be fun. You have no idea. It'd be really fun to be as big as you for like 48 hours.
Why is that?
Because you're bigger than me. Because it'd be cool to have people notice me when I walk through it, to open my mouth. You know, your shoulders alone say more than me in 10 minutes with my mouth. Anyway, he's a humble big guy. But as I say, it's got to be an interesting thing to watch these kids react. And I'm wondering, do you get a Napoleon's? I mean, you probably get all of it. Do you get a Napoleonic syndrome where a kid, even a little squirt?
You know, for the most part, you're gonna come across all of that.
Right.
The probably the most important thing about going into that situation is one, the physical helps tremendously.
Sure.
But two, being able to meet that kid where they are at that moment, because that's the button you push to break.
Wow.
Exactly. Yeah. I mean, Rob is right on.
Come on.
It's all about It's all about where they're at psychologically.
Yeah, you got a question because we got lots of people.
Physical intimidation is only one tool out of many, many tools that you would need.
Right.
But just one, and it's not one you have to pull out first.
Right. Rob is at any given moment, he is part bounty hunter, part enforcer, part psychologist, and part friend.
Yes.
Am I in the ballpark? I'm sure there's a few other parts that I'm missing.
You are. You are in the ballpark.
Sexy.
When you mentioned the part about the battered parent, it actually reminded me of a quick story, but I went into a case where we met the mom and law enforcement outside the house. Mom used the key to let us in, and father was not there because we were told he'd been beaten to a pulp with a baseball bat, and he was at the hospital.
Jesus.
So as two of us went in, we walked in, and the sad part was when we saw holes in the walls as we were walking down the hall of the baseball bat had made holes and had busted pictures. But as we're walking down the hall, we're seeing pictures of what was this boy who was much younger until we got to the end of the hall where he was, and he was there. He was passed out. The bat was within arm's reach of him, and he had done drugs to the point that he had reacted in such a violent way that he had now just completely passed out. He ended up being very calm for us to take out at that point. But the sad part was just walking through the hall, seeing the pictures of this boy in Little League, you know, doing happy things with his family, getting to the end of the hall and seeing this very, very angry boy who had beaten his father up. It was a very sad situation.
Wow. Wow, 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 wow. And so,
but
yeah.
When I say the happy ending to the story is that he did go to a program. He did come out of a program, a very good young man. He contacted us. He actually thanked us. About 3 years later, he contacted us and said that, that had we not been as aggressive with him and getting him to the program he needed to be at, and had his parents not been as aggressive, he probably would be dead or in jail somewhere.
Well, you know, and that's kind of where I wanted to start going as we have about 6 minutes left in the show here. I kind of wanted to start going in that direction, and that is that, you know, we again, because I don't have the same knowledge as you, Alan, and I'm just sort of filling in. I kind of just went in a sort of a public interest avenue here, and just in case any families were tuning in for the first time about to go down a road, I just kind of talked some pedestrian stuff here and talked about, you know, we were talking about sort of the structure of the gang situation and I guess what I want to do is for the last 5 minutes here is sort of maybe go on the positive note and turn about and talk about the success stories and what lies ahead in terms of hope, that there's always hope. There's always hope for your clients. And I guess the first thing, Rob, I'll ask you off the bat here, Rob. If you could, again, speaking in generalities, give me another example of something that you even thought might have been a lost cause, even though maybe professionally you never go there, but something you thought was like, oh, this is a long shot. That was a success.
Well, right.
And I'm sure you got a million of them.
I do got a lot of them. I will say this. The guy who didn't make it today, that's definitely one of them.
I was thinking that must be one of them. Yeah.
So far as even when it comes to my involvement in West Shield, there's been times where I can think right off the top of my head where we went in this house, mm-hmm. me and my partner went into this house, mm-hmm. and it is in downtown LA.
Okay.
And there's two twin brothers. Mm-hmm. The only way you can identify which one was which was by a tattoo.
I was just going to say ink.
And it was a tattoo on their belly.
Really?
So we had to. Now we go into this house, and mm-hmm. this house, the dad is out of the picture. Right. I actually think he died when they were young.
And that, by the way, that's a consistent thing. That is like
huge.
A refrain constantly, isn't it?
If you learn nothing else,
yeah,
you learn that at all costs,
yeah,
if you can stay married,
yeah,
you need to try to do everything you possibly can when there's children involved before you just close that door.
Right.
Because the one commonality that 99.9% of them have are broken homes, whether it be death, divorce, or anything like that.
Wow. Yeah. Okay.
So, I mean, it's amazing how much that separation will mess up a kid's head. And basically, that's how that whole gang lifestyle gets capitalized on. Mm-hmm. They look to fill that void that they're not having with that family.
Right.
Anyways, aside from that, so we go into this house. There's two twin brothers, and they're all methed out. And wow. The mom doesn't even live there anymore. That's how brutal it is. They when the dad died, they inherited some money, so she bought this house cash. And basically, it's those kids' house. And she's gone now.
Jesus.
And the whole house, if you drive down the 5 here, right around the Rampart Division, if uh-huh. you look off the side of the freeway, you see all the tagging, all the gang.
Sure.
The whole house was done in that, on the inside. There was nasty. There's no. It's almost like when they needed a new dish,
yeah.
they just went and got a new dish, used it, and stacked it up on the counter. Then
it was just filth.
It was disgusting. The yeah. house was disgusting. It was basically
and these
two twin brothers. So basically, Jesus. we hear they're going to be a nightmare.
Uh-huh.
You know, right. You're right. And I hear that, and I even hear that from some of the local police guys that, hey, you know what, good.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Right.
But anyway, so we go in. We were able to separate them.
Right.
We were able to figure out which one's which.
Mm-hmm.
Believe it or not, one guy stays. And we're only there to get one.
Wow.
So this other guy, he's just as bad, obviously.
Sure.
You know? Anyway, so we get this kid out and we take him. And we're able actually to go from a super intense, super violent situation
right.
to stopping off at Denny's on the way. For breakfast when we drop him off.
No kidding.
So at that point, you know, we sit down with him, and that's when we kind of start that whole re-inputting
right.
what's already in his mind, right? So it's kind of right. like now we got to kind of, on our end, because we have such a short window with the kid.
Right.
That we try to maximize with the biggest impact,
mm-hmm.
you know, which what we can leave them with the strongest. Remember, just an hour ago, you would have shot me if you had a gun in your hand.
Sure.
And now we're at Denny's.
Wow.
Having All-American Slam, right?
Sure, sure.
So we have to, at that point, at least me personally, I try to eliminate any bad option
mm-hmm.
that kid can make, whether it be verbally or physically.
Sure.
That way, the platform for making good options is the only one he can have.
Mm-hmm.
So the options he makes, even as small as they are,
mm-hmm.
are the right ones.
Right.
And by the end of the morning, you've made 3 or 4 of those right decisions now.
Right.
And now you got a little bit of momentum.
A little bit of momentum.
And you got a little bit of a taste on what doing what's right,
mm-hmm.
what it does for who you are as a person.
Right.
Anyway, so that kid, we get him to the program. Mm-hmm. I check in on him actually a few months later, and he's doing awesome.
Solid citizen.
Yep. He actually is leaving that when he's leaving the program, he's plugging into this this boxing gym that's in LA by his house. Mm-hmm. And they have this great after school program mm-hmm. type mm-hmm. thing for kids that want to stay out of trouble. And that
right,
kind of thing.
Right.
And last I heard, he was really doing good. And Matt was a kid. The brother actually ended up going to the boxing gym with him.
Okay.
And I don't know where the brother went from there, but
right.
this kid,
yeah.
from what I understand,
wow.
Is pretty good.
Any word on if mom is back in her home?
They do have a relationship. He actually went out of that home with
right.
his mom.
Right. Okay.
So where that actually physically sets as a house, who knows?
Fascinating. But,
Yeah, that I mean, that was one that was...
Damn. Well, Rob, that's it, brother. This show is now kaput. And we've been having trouble with our phone system, and Alan kind of faded off into the ethers at one point during the show. So, safe to say, your job is still good for the holidays.
Yeah,
good.
There you go.
But once again, if you are a family, if you're a parent, if you know somebody who has a family with an at-risk teen or youth, Westshield is basically one of the first places you can go. And even if you're not ready for their services, you guys can point them in the right direction.
Absolutely.
There are
absolutely.
Other. It's not like you don't just jump straight to something like this necessarily. There's other and Rob and
we actually
and
will come
there.
Into the home and work with the family as
yeah.
well.
You see, there you go. So it is a great first. Even if it's not where you end up, if you don't end up using their resources right away. At least, obviously, the first step you take is not necessarily, come get my kid out of here, you know, but once again, what's the 800 number?
It's 800-899-8585.
There you go. And it's and what's the website?
There's a website. It's called transportingteens.com.
Uh-huh. Transportingteens.com. And Alan Cardoza, the host of the show, has been unavailable today. My name is TJ McCormick. It's been an honor to fill in for Alan. Rob, it's been an honor to talk to you.
Oh, thanks.
And I would love to carry this on my show someday. I would love to have you as a guest. And that really would be way cool. So on behalf of Alan and West Shield wishes you all and Answers for the Family right here at LATalkRadio.com every Monday at 10 a.m., 11 a.m. Eastern Time, or West Coast Time, 2 in the East. Wish you a very Merry Christmas, a Happy Hanukkah, and have a wonderful holiday season, everybody. I will be following up. If you want to stick around for my show, is on in about 8 minutes from now. All the very best. Once again, Rob, Merry Christmas to you.
Merry Christmas to you.
And I will catch you all later, and tune in next week for Alan Cardoza Answers with the Family. Bye-bye now.
Listening to Answers for the Family with Alan Cardoza. Only on LA Talk Radio.